This is the DayZero update for March 8th, 2015. I'm Filippo D'Anolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And this has been a pretty crazy week. I mean, we've got a lot of GDC stuff to cover. And
other PAX, not so much. Not as much as I was expecting.
No, PAX I think we'll probably hear more of next week. But you know, before we get off on that, what have you guys been playing?
I'm still on Ridge Racers 2 and Trails in the Sky, and that's probably going to be the center of my gaming, at least until Mortal Kombat in a couple weeks, and,
yeah.
You know, Final Fantasy Type-0.
Yeah. Have you gotten that 100% yet?
No. I'm probably going to go right down to the wire on that one, but it's okay, because I love playing it.
Okay.
How about you?
Yeah. Well, Defense Grid 2, I've been playing some of that on the PS4 this week. Let's see. Dead or Alive 5 last round. I'm playing some more of that. I think.
Is it treating you better since the patch?
A little bit. It hasn't crashed as often.
That's always good.
Yeah. It still does. It still does crash, though, so that's not that great. And I've been playing Axiom Verge, which I can't actually say anything about. So, yeah.
You're under embargo for quite a while on that one.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Be talking about that one in a couple of weeks at least. You, Brandon?
I finally finished Dragon Age Inquisition.
Ah.
It's done. Yeah. Primarily, my primary gaming has been Metro Last Light Redux. That's been my primary gaming, which I gotta say, I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I just love the whole universe. It's just so bleak and at the same time just so weird and eccentric and everything. Just the weird way they've taken the whole Russian metro system and literally turned it into a whole underground civilization. Let's see. I've also been playing Bayonetta 2 for my Wii U. And here's a weird one. I've been playing Lords of Midnight on my iPhone.
Okay.
Those of you don't know what Lords of Midnight was, it's an old ZX Spectre game from way back in the early 80s. It's a type of game that, despite its age, is surprisingly epic in scope and surprisingly intricate. Basically, it's a combination of a war game, an RPG, and an adventure game. And it was made by one guy, Mike Singleton, way back in the early 80s. And basically what it is, like I said, it's a combination war game, adventure game, and RPG. And you can basically win the game pretty much by using any three method. You can either go straight war game and destroy all the opposing armies, or just, you know, conquer more territory, or you could do straight up RPG and just go and, you know, kill all the baddies in one-on-one battles, or you can just go in the adventure game mode where you can go into the head enemy guy's castle and steal his big magical artifact and use it against him. Remember, this game came out in 1984. This was a Spectrum game.
Yeah, that sounds pretty ambitious for something of that time.
Yeah, despite having really primitive graphics by today's standards and absolutely no sound, this game manages to be extremely intricate and epic in scope that, frankly, I don't think any game today can measure up to. I mean, there is no game I know of in the modern world that can equal that. And considering how advanced the technology is now, you'd think they'd be able to come up with something like that, but nope. But that's what I've been playing.
That's a pretty stacked lineup there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How about yourself, Teresa?
I have been finishing up with Pokemon. I'm playing Alpha Sapphire. And I played a little more Civ 5 and worked on more of my achievements on Civ Revolution 2, which is on the mobile platform right now.
Okay.
I really need to stop with that, man. They really get you with those achievements.
Yes. Have you played Beyond Earth?
No, I haven't gotten that yet. So I saw it, it's being offered free, I think, with some of ATI's video cards.
Yeah.
I was browsing around Micro Center, and I thought, well, that would be an incentive, but, you know, I don't know how you guys stand, but I'd probably get NVIDIA instead.
Well, I'm kind of graphics card agnostic. I mean, I'm running ATI in my system right now, so I had no issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. So you wanna...
Well, I'm using a laptop, so...
Yeah. So you want to get to our discussion topics?
Actually, before we do that, just a quick little thing I wanted to point out. You may have already guessed this, but the Wind Walkers Kickstarter...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it did not get funded.
Hmm.
You want to hear how much they actually managed to get, though? $132,648.
Wow, that's something to sneeze at.
They got there.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, you know, their goal was $330,000, but considering, you know, that's still a pretty good amount, which should go to show you how much interest there actually was in this project.
Yeah.
But like I said a couple weeks ago, the project, they are still more or less going to keep the project going forward somewhat, and they're planning on coming back later and doing another Kickstarter, but
yeah,
this time doing it maybe a bit different.
Hmm.
But you know, again, you know, and I hope it does go better next time, because again, I've said before, I really am interested in this project, and I hope it does eventually go through.
Yeah.
But
so where do they go from here?
That's all I got to say about that. Well, on the site, they said, one of their primary reasons for starting this Kickstarter was they wanted to show their investors how much of interest there would be for this game.
Yeah.
And, as far as that goal goes, they certainly accomplished that. It says they're going to take a few months to compile all we have learned and all your comments to then give you a clear vision of our future plans. It says we will hit replay and we will try until we reach our goal. So they're going to try it again later on.
Hmm.
All right.
So,
yeah.
We got to something a bit more depressing now.
Well, I don't know about depressing. The information itself is pretty encouraging, and it paints a picture of gaming demographics just growing overall. And I think it's another way in that we're seeing the same sort of thing play out that we've seen on the sales charts.
Yeah.
Where,
mm-hmm.
You know, considering where we're at in the generation so far, the sales numbers are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Basically, the implication is that the gaming community is exploding in pretty much every demographic. People are coming up from, you know, their early to mid-teens playing video games at a rate that we've never seen before. Whether that means that they identify themselves as gamers or not, you know, is less of a certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's any surprise there that, you know, that isn't a given. Just considering the current social climate in gaming, if you will.
Mm.
But... But yeah, I think the numbers in and of themselves are very encouraging.
Yeah.
It was the comment section. I should say this is on Polygon.
That
hosted the numbers and the information pertaining to the study and everything. The comments section has some troubling suggestions in it, if you will. And it just kind of it reinforced the reality to me as to why I'm kind of a man without a country as far as the current social climate surrounding video games today. I think that's the best way to really describe it. We'll be linking to the study and the information in the show notes, and in so doing, you'll also be seeing some of the comments, should you choose to look at that. But it definitely promotes the debate.
Well, if you look at these numbers, you got, you know, both young girls and young boys that they don't mind female characters at all. Some of them actually, you know, prefer
them.
I actually was always in that demographic.
Yeah.
To be honest, if I could play a female character in a, you know, in an RPG or something, that's usually was my first choice.
And there's also quite a few that you know are agnostic either way. Well, which is what.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And another thing that it seems to point out is that as guys get older, they seem to be the demographic that starts caring the least about what characters they play as.
Which is a strange turn of events, but
they're really interesting numbers when you start correlating them. I mean, I've been going over them over and over again since the article first got out, and I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, what it shows to me is that, well, basically this is, you know, a self, like I said earlier, a self-solving problem. We just have to give it time to solve itself, which kind of brings us to some of the comments that were...
Yeah. Where to begin? There was the one that basically suggested that maybe we should do away with defined protagonists entirely. As a developer myself, I don't think that's really possible in every given context.
Yeah, the only way you could really do that is if you have a game where you don't interact with anything.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that wouldn't make for a very interesting game.
I mean, you look at games that do allow for that.
Yeah.
And those games' involvement with the player is really, really less, than those games' involvement with players or the player in when you have a defined character. And not one that you just kind of, I mean, Elder Scrolls is a good example of not having a defined protagonist. And they really have to dial back the way the world interacts with the player. You know, not every game can be Mass Effect. And then, you know, framing that in other things that we've heard from Polygon over the years, or at least over the last year or so, I just don't like the idea that that it could become a valid question when reviewing a game: is this doing enough to promote inclusion? I mean, if it does, great, and like especially. Phil and Teresa, you two have known me for years and years. You know I'm a pretty liberal guy.
Yeah.
And I think if inclusion or representation is really a problem as it is in games right now, yes, let's fix it by all means. I just don't like the idea of taking games to task when they don't, you know, get involved with the matter, and that really seems to be the road that we're going down from the looks of it.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a good idea to develop a game specifically to address this when that's outside of the scope of what the game is about.
Yeah.
It's like,
at that point, you're sort of like starting to develop game development by committee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that ultimately does a disservice not to just the game itself, but to the development process. Yeah. And you know, it's essentially...
Yeah, gamers don't want to be force-fed an agenda.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Nobody really wants to be force-fed an agenda. And, you know, if the developers are going to be making a game that's going to do that, you know, if it's germane to the game itself, perfect. That's great. But if it's not, they can't ask us to pay for something that's basically going to tick us off.
Yeah.
And not because of what you're trying to do, you know, not the message they're trying to get across, but because they're, you know, they're forcing an agenda on us when, you know, it's going to take away from the game, and that's not what we want.
Yeah. I think we kind of discussed some of this last week when we were talking about Anita Sarkeesian's guidelines, the ones that she came up with. And, you know, I think the big point with there is that she framed them as suggestions and not as demands.
Yeah. And,
you know, like,
and
this
these were
is
reasonable
something that,
suggestions, too.
Yeah, they were.
Yes, all of them were. I mean, even the ones that I did not necessarily completely agree with, still thought were reasonable arguments to be made.
Like, this is definitely a starting point.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of that's, and the thing is, you know, some games were already starting to address them. Like, we were talking about this earlier, Blizzard's Overwatch, their upcoming sort of MOBA first-person shooter game, they introduced a new female character named Zarya, who's one of the tank characters, and Zarya is a extremely muscular, pink-haired Russian chick. and she was got an immediately positive response when they showed her, except for, you know, certain gamer gators who had to come out of the woodwork because, you know, Blizzard dared to use a female model that wasn't the traditional one. But you know, it's ultimately, I think this is something that the game development will solve on its own naturally.
Yeah, this is,
you know,
what this really is growing pains of the video game industry as a whole.
The
industry itself is not even 50 years old. And around that time in Hollywood, they were having the same exact questions with female roles and what they could and couldn't do, and these were all things that they had to go through and solve themselves.
We're coming into our own.
Yeah, and it's
like
the evolution of the medium. It's an ugly part.
The only
of it,
difference, but, though, yeah, but the only difference though is that they didn't have the internet back then.
No, they did not.
True.
Yeah.
So, you know, the ugliness, the ugly, because the difference is that the ugly part of it wasn't as public.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be an industry insider to be able to see some of that ugliness, but now all you got to do is look at a friggin' comment section.
Yeah.
Apparently.
And you can see it.
Yeah.
Although I think it could be, an argument could be made that the ugly side of Gamergate has always been a part of the internet. It's just that Gamergate is what they ended up gathering around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's always been there. But once Gamergate came out, they had a target.
Yeah.
You know, they had a cause they could get around. And
a misguided one, but hey, what do you want?
A misguided and... All right, but on to something else.
Yeah, something a bit more.
The more I think of, the more I talk about Gamergate, the more I feel the vomit rising up in my throat. Just
yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah.
So, apparently, we're not going to have Street Fighter V in time for Evo. For
those
of us who thought that was going to happen. A leak got out initially, and it's since more or less been given the after the fact confirmation that Street Fighter V will be in our hands and PlayStation 4s in spring of 2016.
Do you not think that we'll at least see some more of it at Evo?
I'm sure there'll be like a reveal trailer. There's plenty of time to show off characters.
Yeah.
They may even have a demo.
They've implied that that we're not going to be seeing another 44 character roster like we ended up with in Ultra Street Fighter 4. Right now we're sitting at 4 characters, so there's plenty of time for them to do stuff and have some fun reveals, things like that.
Yeah.
So, and there is the public beta that they've talked about doing, which I guess we'll be getting the details on later on.
Well, I'm just glad they're not rushing it.
Yeah, I was worried about that when, I mean, there was some initial rumbling about Street Fighter V as early as, 2012, 2013, which would have been way too early. And one of their producers, Tomoaki Ayano, seemed to agree with me on that and actually suggested that there really should be no Street Fighter V until maybe 2017, 2018, which is where I would have put it.
Yeah.
But spring 2016 is a good compromise, and it it gives us at least one more Evo of Street Fighter IV as a main game, so that'll put us at 7 years of that, believe it or not. Wow. And so, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we'll have, Mortal Kombat X to tide us over, so.
The PS4 version of Ultra Street Fighter IV, there's
the Shield
Killer Instinct is still great.
Street Fighter 4, which we'll talk about later. Yeah, we won't be starving for fighting games, at least.
Yeah. Nope.
Something else we're not going to be starving for.
Yeah, Rock Band 4 has been pretty much officially announced. We've got some vague details. Like, we do know that it's going to be on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Harmonix is developing this independently. So that's going to be cool. DLC transfer is going to be a little weird. If you've bought tracks for the PS3 or Xbox 360, those will just carry over into Rock Band 4. But your disc imports for Rock Band 3 will not be a thing initially, but they might end up being.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's just some sort of weird. Yeah.
So. Ugh. Yeah, and instrument compatibility is something they're also looking at, but that's okay. I'll just get I'll go for another bundle when the game comes out.
Yeah.
And are you guys picking it up when it comes out?
I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
I might.
It's not really something I'm thinking of right now, but just like the first Rock Band and before that Guitar Hero 2 on the Xbox 360, it wasn't something I zeroed in on. I just ended up with it somehow. And it's almost like I was issued it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you don't have this. You're going to need this. Here you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember purchasing it, but it felt like it just kind of was a thing that kind of happened rather than something I sought out actively.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things that I noticed from the, from the videos and their Facebook posts is, they've actually dropped the keyboard part.
That's no real surprise.
Yeah.
I'm not too surprised. The keyboard, honestly, didn't
take off.
It wasn't as good
as expecting.
Yeah.
Nah.
I mean, it worked. It was functional. It's just
definitely
nobody wants to play the keyboard. So. Yeah.
Well, there's a reason why they. There's a reason they eventually invented the keytar. It's because the keyboard player got sick of being stuck off in the corner. He wanted to be up on stage. Yeah. So
this is very true.
You know, I would actually love to see. I would love to see another Parappa the Rappa game at some point.
Hmm. Well, knowing Sony's
current, am I alone on that one?
No, a lot of people who would like to see a Parappa sequel or reboot or.
Well, I know there was a Parappa sequel, yeah, but that was a while ago. There was a Parappa 2.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. It was on the PSP, I think.
But that was a while ago.
Hmm. Yeah, so Rock Band 4, it's happening. Some of us are excited.
Yeah. Sega, I'm still not sure what to think about what's going on with them. They announce that they're leaving console gaming behind, and almost immediately they send out a postcard that implies that they're collaborating on something with Game Freak, of all teams.
Hmm. Yeah.
It should be noted that the recipients of the postcard were RPG Site. Hmm. And yeah. For those who don't know, Game Freak is the team that makes Pokemon. So they've kind of got a good hand with RPGs, if they're going to work with Sega to broaden their horizons on that front, this could be something special. I mean, obviously we don't have too much to go on yet, but the implications are interesting.
Well, it wouldn't be unprecedented. A lot of people don't realize that. Before they made Pokemon, the game that they released before Pokemon was a game for the Genesis called Pulse Man, which was a really good action platformer. Actually, I would argue as good as anything that Treasure put out around that time.
It was brutal, though. That game did not mess around.
Oh, yeah. It's a difficult game, but it's a good game. Yeah. But, working with Sega is definitely not unprecedented for them. The only thing that surprised me, though, is that I thought that they had become a subsidiary of Nintendo, but I guess they still have enough independence that they can work with rival developers.
That or they're doing it for Nintendo.
Oh, yeah, there's that, too.
Hmm. Yeah, so all we got is basically a postcard sent to RPG Site, and that's kind of...
There's what looks to be an elephant just off screen with peanuts and.
Something makes me think Sega is just trolling.
It's a charging elephant.
It could be.
Chasing down two peanuts and what looks to be a hand grenade. So, yeah. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the possibility of this. Being a mobile adventure instead of going with, obviously, with consoles? Do you think that they're going to head over into the mobile market?
Well, Sega did spare their mobile division, and they're trying to build around that. When they say they've dropped consoles, they mean just consoles, handhelds, and, PC and mobile are still very much on the table for Sega. They didn't just cease to exist. They're just... they're just ditching consoles.
But does that include handheld consoles too?
If I were to take a guess, I would say yes. But handhelds have been very good to Sega, so I would certainly not mind being wrong.
Yeah.
And they've still got all their studios pretty much intact, so those studios need something to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they end up coming up with.
Yeah. So we'll get on to the DOA community. Is soft banning the sexy costumes for DOA 5 last round?
Yeah.
Now, when they say sexy costumes, they mean like the bikinis and the towels and but the lingerie stuff.
Here's the thing: only for the women.
Okay.
I shit you not.
Yeah, that's kind of problematic.
This is too stupid for me to be kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, the article's right there. The the implications are that this is to attract more tournament players, more sponsors, and in this new streaming era of, you know, the fighting game community, that's understandable, but the way they're going about this is so ridiculous that I don't know if it can hold up.
Yeah.
Like, they've either got to get some more consistency with the rules or just drop it outright because, this is something I can very much understand both sides of. They really have to work on the consistency of their message if it's going to take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these costumes are just, well, I won't say borderline tasteless. I think kind of most of them actually are fairly tasteless. So, you know, I'm okay with not seeing them in tournaments, but at the same time, I could definitely go for, I could definitely see the argument that, you know, you shouldn't just restrict for restriction's sake.
Yeah. You know. And DOA has had its identity and its reputation for years and years, and I don't think, you know, if the goal is to actually subvert that, I think it's way too late for anything of that sort. But you know, but by the same token, if this is going to open more doors, maybe to obviously not this year Evo, but you know, further down the road.
Yeah.
I can see why they'd want to enact something like that because DOA 5 Last Round is definitely a game that you can build around.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That they want to take something like this more seriously is at the very least understandable. They'd really just have to work on the consistency of their message and of their execution because right now, people are just kind of laughing at them.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, if they really wanted to take this seriously, and this would be something that Team Ninja would have to collaborate with them on, they could, add in a tournament mode setting where you could just turn those costumes that you don't want to see off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be one way to go about it.
I mean, I can see why it's not in there right now because I don't think they saw this coming.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, it's something that they really might consider for a future update.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just weird that we're having to have this conversation.
Yeah. Again, it's a whole consistency of the message thing.
Yeah. I can totally understand them wanting to create some basic, I guess you call them decency standards for a tournament, you know? But you know, if you're going to do that, you gotta have to do it across the board. You can't just limit it to one, literally just like one half of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, God knows some of those costumes for Bass are pretty.
We won't go there.
Yeah. No.
So.
That's the thing.
Back to some GDC stuff. Mevius Final Fantasy, we've talked about it on the show a couple times. We now have the first footage of the game in the form of a 15-second clip, mainly in support of the Unity 5
engine.
Yeah, for mobile. This is kind of an interesting game. It looks like it's a single-player turn-based ATB RPG.
Mm-hmm.
They've already said that it's pretty deeply rooted in the world of the first game, but it's not a remake by any stretch of the imagination. So it's like, it, in a really weird way, you could probably call it Final Fantasy 1-2.
Yeah.
Which is it's a very interesting world for them to be revisiting, and I look forward to seeing what they do with it. Yeah, we now have a 15-second clip that, you know, gives us some idea of what it looks like. For their part, Square Enix are saying that Mevius is a very serious attempt at bringing console-quality RPGs to mobile. Mm. And I think they did this already with the Chaos Rings series. But if they want to, if they want to continue the experiments with actual Final Fantasy games, I have no problem with that whatsoever. And Mevius looks great from what little we've
seen. Yeah, it does. At first, I seriously thought it was a PC game when I first saw it.
Right.
But yeah. No, that is totally a iPhone, iPad, mobile game. So, I mean, I haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen graphics on a mobile game that good since, like, Infinity Blade. So.
I have, but they tend to be Android games.
Square Enix's mobile initiatives just keep looking better and better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I just find myself wishing that they would port some of these games to console because over on the console side, we've been starved for anything like Final Fantasy Dimensions or Chaos Rings for quite some time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any of these super traditional JRPGs, I like playing them. I like having them there on mobile, but I really would like to have a, you know, these are games that deserve to be played on the big screen.
Yeah.
Do you know if any of these Square Enix mobile games actually have controller support?
They should. Offhand, I don't know. But I think at the very least I've seen something about that with Final Fantasy Dimensions and the Chaos Rings games.
Okay.
It's something we might have to look into after the show.
Yeah, because, you know.
Now I'm curious.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you got your Note 3 there, you just get a MHL to HDMI adapter, plug your phone into your TV, and sync up a DualShock 3, and there you go.
Oh, and then nobody hears from me for the next 3 months.
Yeah.
Sad part is, I'm only half joking when I say that. There are so many good RPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Brian, you got the next story, Brandon?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Interplay is planning on going back, and they're planning to dust off their old Clay Fighter franchise for a PC game sometime next year. Now,
surprising on a few levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really old.
The thing is.
Yeah, it's very old.
Yeah. It's really kind of hard to explain to folks who didn't grow up with the series what exactly its appeal was. Because, you know, gameplay wise, the Clay Fighter games were always average fighters at best. But.
That could play against it. This is the post Street Fighter IV world where competitive balance and competitive polish are no longer really optional elements, and so it'll be interesting to see if Clay Fighter either gets in line or just pays the price.
Yeah, well, I mean, they managed to, you know, to update Killer Instinct, so anything is possible.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say if they strike gold the way that the Double Helix did when they brought back Killer Instinct, then that would be an outcome far better than I think any of us could ask for with Clay Fighter. But
yeah,
another thing I wanted to say, Interplay's still a thing? They're still around?
Yeah, they're sort of, kind of around.
I have not heard that name in a long time.
Nope, but they are still very much around, just in a much diminished capacity to what they used to be.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point I was trying to make earlier,
sorry.
You have to understand it's fine. It's the nature of this whole thing, but
the thing you have to remember that we're going to be adding to the show here toward the end.
Okay,
go ahead.
But we'll get to it. The thing about Clay Fighter, you have to understand, Clay Fighter came out right around the time when fighting games were the king. And when every developer and their mother was out trying to make the new Street Fighter or the new Mortal Kombat. And basically every new fighting game had to have some gimmick to sort of separate it from the mass of other fighting games that were coming out. Clay Fighters, obviously, their gimmick was the fact that all the characters were claymation. And to be honest, the best part of the Clay Fighter games was always seeing all the characters that they came up with, because if the Clay Fighter studio developers, if they could do one thing right, it was character design. They came up with incredibly zany and wacky character designs, everything from, like, you know, a snowman, a guy made out of taffy, the fat opera singing woman that's in every Saturday morning cartoon ever, an Elvis impersonator.
1950s era Blob.
Yeah.
And actually, the Blob was probably my personal favorite, because he basically would mold himself into various forms and objects. Yeah, like, he had a dive bombing attack where he literally molded himself into a plane and just dive bombed you. Yeah.
And what was,
you know, he turned into a mouth.
Literally just turned into a fist.
Yeah.
Yep. And he'd also turn into, like, a sledgehammer and a meat grinder and all types of stuff. And that was all just the first game. The second game came out, which was Clay Fighter 2 Judgment Clay, and that game had some really crazy characters. They had a boxing kangaroo with her little Joey still in her pouch. They had a giant juvenile delinquent baby with, like, a spiked rattle. There was a sentient banana person with a Jamaican accent.
Lots of racial stereotypes, though.
Oh, you haven't seen until we get to number three. And they also had Hoppy, which was like a sort of like a Bugs Bunny Rambo type character. I forgot to mention, the first game, they had probably the laziest end boss in the history of fighting games, where it was literally a guy named End Boss, capital N period boss. And frankly, I can only describe him as a giant sentient pearl necklace with, like, googly eyes on it. In the second game, you fought like something like a palette swap and a half of whatever character you were playing as a boss character. And then the third Clay Fighter. Oh Lord. I have,
like,
to kind of explain
and a third or something like that.
Yeah. Clay Fighter 63 and one third. It was for the Nintendo 64. It was a joke on, you know, the fact that all Nintendo 64 games back then had the 64 at the end of them. Yeah. And the thing was, I just have to sort of point this out, because I was really, really excited for this game before it came out. I had a Nintendo Power magazine that had, like, a whole, like, 10, 12 page article on the game when it was coming up, and just the things that they were hyping for it just seemed incredible. Even before some things they did later, one of the big things that they were bringing up was the fact that you were going to be able to, if you punched a character hard enough in certain parts of stage, you would be able to knock them into another stage. And at that point, the only other fighting game that did that was Mortal Kombat 3, and it only did that on, like, two stages. In this case, they were planning on doing it for, like, every stage.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Clay Fighter 63 and the third was supposed to take place on an island, and so, like, all the stages were, like, based around island stuff. So there was like a tiki club, there was, like, an old army bunker with, like, a huge, like, anti-aircraft gun in the background. There was, like, this old broken down tugboat that was, like, covered in green slime, which you can guess whose stage that was supposed to be. They had like an old, like, a Mayan temple stage. And you want to talk about racial stereotypes? This game had Kung Pao.
Oh,
and
God.
Kung Pao was probably one of the worst Asian stereotypes I've ever seen in a video game. I mean, even
not
worse
surprising,
than...
Absolutely.
I mean, he was completely like bowl haircut, buck teeth, wore a combat gi, spoke in what I can only call, what spoke in a dialect I can only call Waglish. It's like English, except it's mostly wah.
Of course.
But they had a bunch of other new characters, too. They had a small sentient Statue of Liberty that was, like, all bulked up and used her torch as a flamethrower. Nice. They had a character called Hobocop, which was sort of a Robocop send-off, except it was just some drunken homeless guy dressed all in trash can armor. They had a giant sentient hand, sort of like the Thing from the Addams Family, except this one was obviously severed from somebody's hand because the bone was still sticking out of the end of it. One of the other things, then by the time the Nintendo Power issue came out that I was talking about, they had decided that they were going to switch to all 3D backgrounds. Hmm. I should have seen a problem here for right here. Because on the surface, the idea of, you can play 2D characters in a full 3D background. That sounds awesome, doesn't it? You know, that sounds like a cool idea. You know, if you could do it right. I mean, they even had a part where you would fight on, like, this giant castle that was basically a giant stone toilet, and you could knock them into the toilet and then flush them down and then fight them in a sewer level. You know, it was stuff like that made me think, oh, man, this game's going to be awesome.
And then it came.
You know, and, well, actually, before... Well, before that, they came out with another issue of Nintendo Power, and then the first problem showed because they ended up chopping the character roster in half. You remember the Lady Liberty character, the Hobocop character, the hand character? Mm-hmm. Gone. None of them. Mm-hmm. But they did manage to put some two extra characters in there, characters that were actually pretty familiar. One of them was Boogerman. Mm-hmm. And the other was Earthworm Jim. Hmm.
Both fit in yes, perfectly, that I would say.
Yeah.
Sounds like they
work. Yeah, they actually do. Yes, and when I say Earthworm Jim, I am talking about that Earthworm Jim, the one you're thinking of. And then the game came out. And, oh, okay. Remember when I said earlier about how...
Us, by the way.
Yeah. Remember when I said about having 2D fighters on a 3D background and how neat that would have sounded?
Mm-hmm.
That's all well and good until you found out what happened when you knocked them into another stage, because the character models themselves were 2D, period. There was no, you know, spinning around form or anything like that. They basically became paper cutouts, getting shoved through these door openings and everything. God, and it just ended up being an ugly, ugly game. You know, the lighting was terrible. I'm really not kidding. The lighting in some parts was so bad you could barely see the environment around you.
Hmm.
It definitely suffered from having a smaller character roster, because like I said, the best part about Clay Fighter games is about all the wacky characters they came up with. And although they did sort of help it by, you know, adding in a better combo system and finishing moves, what they famously call claytalities. Yes, that's what they were really called. It was just an ugly, ugly looking game. Real disappointing. In fact, it was so bad that Interplay ultimately went back and made a sort of a remake of it called Clay Fighter 3 Sculptor's Cut that was a Blockbuster exclusive, in which they went back, they redid some of the lighting, they added in some of the characters they had to cut out, minus HoboCop, because HoboCop was considered too controversial. But they did bring back Lady Liberty and the Hand Guy, and but it was marginally better. I mean, I will say it was definitely significantly of better quality, but that's kind of damning with faint praise, because the product they had before that was just depressing. I will always remember, though, my favorite moment in the entire game was playing a character called Sumo Santa, which was literally Santa Claus as a sumo wrestler. And one of his claytalities was called Santa's Gonna Sit on Your Lap. So he jumps up, jumps on top of you, and you disappear.
Yeah.
And then he bends over and basically farts you out into pieces.
Pleasant.
And he's going, no, the whole time. So it looks like what they're going to be trying with this new game is they said they're going to have 20 characters, each of them from all three of the original games, and they're going to try and add in new gameplay mechanics, and they're going to have the claytalities back, and I just hope it ends up being a good product. That's all I hope for.
After the third one, it looks like it's kind of an uphill battle for them to make themselves relevant again, but you know, I guess if they get the right people behind it, they might be able to pull something off.
Yeah, well, you know, the way I see it, if they could make Killer Instinct relevant again, they can do this. So
we will wait and watch this one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It'll be fun to see how this plays out.
Yeah. Another quick little story from GameStop here. I've started accepting PS2 hardware again.
This is the system that will never die.
Nope.
I mean, when it had its turn at retail, it was so overwhelmingly successful that I'm not sure how the final numbers stacked up next to the NES, but it had to be pretty close. It's still very relevant, very, I would even say, active in terms of being played, if not seeing releases.
I think the releases are pretty much dried up, but
so many gamers still have their PS2s hooked up that I don't see that really changing anytime soon, even with the new wave of consoles having hit.
No, there's
what year did the go ahead.
15 years ago last week, I believe it came out, to answer your question.
In Japan, yeah.
Yeah.
And 15 years ago, so around 2000, late 1999, something like that. That just reminds me, when I was talking about Clay Fighter earlier, that just reminds me, you know, the 1990s never really went away. We're still living in them. I mean, think about this. We got Clay Fighter is coming back. You know, obviously Battletoads looks like it's going to be coming back. Square Enix is openly calling for, pitches for some of their older, hold on just a sec. Sorry. Some of their older properties like Gex and Fear Effect and, Anachronox. And Disney's planning on bringing DuckTales back to television next year. It's just the 90s never ended.
Yeah.
Well, we can blame it all on Jimmy Fallon for Saved by the Bell thing he did.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if some of this demand is just PS4 players who want to go back and bulk up the library.
And that should probably say a lot to people just in and of itself. Backward compatibility matters.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've said that so many times, but we cannot, we cannot say it enough. Backward compatibility matters, and everyone has shit the bed with it lately.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep these back catalogs alive. There are so many amazing games that, need that hardware support.
Yeah.
It's just frustrating to see the hardware manufacturers get so fucking apathetic about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I could kind of see their
well, I understand the reasoning behind it, but it doesn't really inspire consumer confidence.
Yeah, but no. I mean, would you buy an Xbox One with backwards compatibility with 360 and original Xbox games for, like $700? Because
yes.
Probably what it would end up costing.
Yeah, I would do it. Hmm. If they, for within the scope of a generation, there are limits to how much I would spend on gaming hardware. But if a hardware manufacturer wants to come out and show me that loyalty, show me that they're willing to help me protect my investment in the volumes of games that I've bought from them in the past. Yeah, I would pay $700, $800 for a console to support that mentality. I mean, if that's the price that we had to pay, I would pay it.
Oh yeah, PS2 back in stock.
Yeah,
if you don't have one,
sure, it's only a matter of time before we get before games come back in stock as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of a ridiculous markup GameStop will put on those games.
Time will tell, but it's another way to make them available, and I'm certainly not going to criticize that.
Yeah. So, we're talking about.
And I should point out that this isn't them magically making more PS2s available, because they've been selling PS2s steadily over time. This is just that they're willing to take on more hardware trade-ins.
Yeah.
And so...
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, says that this is something that they see money in, and they're going to sustain it for at least a little while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, I wish this was them saying that they know something we don't about backward compatibility coming to the PS4, but I'll be keeping my hopes in check there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit earlier about Battletoads. Apparently, that's another teaser coming.
A really weird place.
Yeah, Shovel Knight for the Xbox One. He just kind of showed up there.
And yet a weirdly appropriate place, too, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because, Shovel Knight really is the epitome of neo-retro gaming.
Yeah.
It's all the best parts of old-school gaming in a really high-quality package.
Yeah. Does anybody here at this point not believe that a Battletoads reboot is going to happen?
I think it's pretty much inevitable.
Yeah.
It seems that way, yeah.
It seems like one of those things that Phil Spencer personally believes in quite a bit.
Yeah.
And when he believes in something, it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also one of the reasons he's one of the funnest executives that we've got in the industry today.
Yeah.
Because he gets these little pet projects that, Phantom Dust is another one that's kind of taken a weird turn in recent weeks. But, when he's really on board with making something happen, he will see it happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be another example of that. So.
And E3 is, we got PAX next week. We got.
PAX is going on right now.
PAX is going on right now. So we'll talk more about that. Maybe next week.
Probably be wrapped up by the time. By the time this episode actually gets online.
Yeah.
Also, if you haven't played Shovel Knight yet, please go play it.
Yeah.
Just
I intend to.
You have to. You really have to. It is absolutely a joy to play.
Okay,
it's
I do
just
have
a lot
it.
Of fun.
I do have it. It has been sitting on my Steam account for a while. For some reason, I thought I hadn't already bought it, but during that last sale, I must have issued it to myself without realizing it.
Yeah.
Such is the nature of Steam.
Yeah.
You just start
it's a lot of fun.
On yourself.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's actually kind of surprising in parts, and it's also really, really funny.
Yeah. And it's available on pretty much everything now.
Mm-hmm.
So, play that.
Definitely.
Yeah, so we got more GDC news from Valve. They've been basically doing
they
a
were
lot
busy
of crap. Yeah, they were busy. They've announced their Source 2 engine about freaking time. The original Source engine was getting a little long in the tooth here.
In before Half-Life
3. Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Yeah.
Too late.
I almost made it.
Yep, too late.
Yeah. So, new engine. VR headset partnering with HTC, which is a weird company to partner with. But from the reports I've been reading about this particular headset, Oculus has run for their money here.
Now, here's what I'm wondering. What if Vive has Steam exclusivity?
It could.
Would that just hand Oculus the saltiest loss in the history of hardware?
Probably.
Well, I mean, Valve is, they do like their Steam platform, but they're also known for, you know, opening things up. You know, Source Filmmaker is a for better or worse, we got
plus
that.
I'm sure it would bring about all kinds of antitrust claims.
Yeah. So, I doubt it will be, you know, exclusive to Steam, but it will probably work better on Steam.
Yeah.
And with all the infrastructure that they've got in there, and, you know, getting content into it will probably be a lot easier if you hook it up to your Steam account. Because
I do think Oculus is kind of banking on having Steam compatibility on the Oculus Rift when they do ship it.
Yeah. Well, I don't doubt that will still happen. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks good from what I've been seeing. I mean,
does it say anything to how used I am to just seeing companies make dick moves like that? Just that's what immediately came to my mind.
Yeah. And they're also going to be releasing a little micro console, $50 Steam Link, which is basically just a head unit for Steam Big Picture game streaming. So,
yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to have any standalone functionality, or at least much of any.
Yeah.
But, you know, for getting your PC games on the TV, it'll work.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are other ways to get PC games on the TV. I mean, an HDMI cable works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if your PC's in the other room, you know, this could make some sense, and the cost isn't too prohibitive. And all of this stuff, I'm not sure about the headset, but most of this stuff's coming out in November, so...
Yeah.
Or Valve time, we'll whichever comes first.
Now the question is, will this actually take off, or will this end up like another Virtual Boy?
I think we're in the era.
I think we're
now.
Ready.
Yeah, where VR is going to take off. It may not be Valve, not be Oculus, it may not be Google Cardboard or whatever, but I think we're going to get there.
Yeah.
All right. I kind of hope so, because I do think we're... Technologically, I think we're at a point now where we can actually make it a viable thing.
Yeah.
It should always be remembered, you know, when you're talking about the Virtual Boy, to always remember that what we ended up getting was at more of a prototype than it was a final product.
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know,
I don't know
even,
if Nintendo could have shipped anything much more advanced than that at the time. I mean, if they'd even put rudimentary... proper screens in that thing, the price would have gone through the roof. As opposed to just the red monochrome displays that scorched your eyes out. If they'd put proper screens in there, at the time it was like 1994, 1995, I think you would have been looking at $700-$800 probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we ended up with.
But great. You know, it was the thing is, of course, the Virtual Boy is always, it's going to be remembered as the one sort of the one unfortunate loss in the cap of
Gunpei Yokoi.
God, his name's yeah, Gunpei Yokoi. But if you've done any reading about it, you'll know that Gunpei Yokoi basically told him, "Look, he was like, dude, we can't put this out. This is a prototype.
It'll cause death.
We can't."
Yeah.
It's like, nope.
What happened?
Pretty much one of the reasons he ended up leaving the company, but whatever.
And of course, you know, with all this VR news, we know that Rule 34 is going to be a thing.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, it was already kind of a thing even before then, but now it's
apparently
full on trend.
Yeah.
Apparently, somebody treated Nathan Grayson over at Kotaku to it at GDC, and he wrote a little thing about it. So
reality porn. Get used to it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you've seen what they've been doing with Source Filmmaker lately.
I'm going to count myself fortunate that I haven't, apparently.
But, yeah, this is definitely going to be a thing. I'm actually surprised it wasn't a thing beforehand. Surprised it took them this long to get here.
You got to get the VR headsets in the possession of actual consumers before it can really take root. But now that we're coming up on that, and it looks like 2016 is going to be the year of that. Proliferation is going to be an understatement.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to make a lot of money, but the truth of the matter is, until you can find something that can actually, how can I say this as family friendly as possible? Until you can actually come up with a technology that can adequately simulate the activity in such a way that it's something as good as the actual thing, you're never really going to have a true virtual reality porn experience.
I think you're severely overestimating people's standards.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you are too. You've heard the saying about pizza. You know, bad pizza, it's still good pizza.
Any port in a storm.
Yeah.
You got that.
Yeah.
And this is probably going to be a
especially key for some people.
This is going to make so much money, though.
Yeah, hand over fist. Yeah. Oh, that was a bad way to put that.
Oh, Teresa.
Oh, no. Lord.
Good night, kids.
So anyway, what would your children say?
Moving on. We've talked about this on past shows, NVIDIA announcing a new console, basically a new version of their Shield hardware, but this time in the form of a proper console. Phil suggested that it would be possibly a Dreamcast 2, which it's not, but it's not that far off the mark either, because there are some Dreamcast-like features that do hold up under scrutiny.
I guess I should go over kind of what they're doing here.
Yeah.
First, this is a Android TV powered console, so you've got a nice solid platform under there. They're powering it with their new Tegra X1 system on a chip, which has about it's an 8-core processor, has about 3 gigs of RAM. Computationally, it's about twice as powerful as an Xbox 360. And they've kind of demonstrated that with some of the stuff that they've been showing off. But they're big, apart from the native games, they're actually pushing their grid cloud quite hard with this little console. So that's going
to
be kind
of interesting. I didn't get into the show notes.
How powerful is an Xbox One compared to an Xbox 360?
Xbox One, according to Xbox 360, is about probably about 4 or 5 times.
All right, I see. Because, I hope this does, like with the Dreamcast, I hope this does end up encouraging a bit of experimentation like the Dreamcast did. Part of what made the Dreamcast such a great system, despite the fact that it ended up getting killed in the market was that Sega encouraged a bit of experimentation with its developers, so you ended up getting some really unique products. Hopefully we can live that again.
Yeah. Well, they're pricing it pretty just about right. I mean, $199 with the controller. It sounds a lot for an Android box, but there are no Android boxes on the market that have the kind of, you know, the kind of gaming power that this will have. So
it really is 7.5 generation.
Yeah, it really is.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's about, much like the Dreamcast was 5.5 generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. And NVIDIA, well, they've got enough muscle to kind of push this along if they really believe in it. And I think that's something that they will actually want to do.
Yeah. Well, the price point isn't bad, you know, for what it can do and as powerful it is as it is. You know, I think there'd be people who may be tempted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to say, they gave the box itself a really awesome, you know, sleek design.
Yeah.
We haven't really seen anything like in gaming for a while.
Yeah, it's like they couldn't stop designing it.
Yeah.
And Capcom seems to be on board. They've already announced Street Fighter Cross Tekken and Ultra Street Fighter 4 and Resident Evil Revelations 2. And, Resident Evil 5 is going to be coming to the Shield. Interesting that they chose 5 over 6. Actually, maybe it's not that interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to use the word smart.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't really surprise me. I just like that what Capcom is doing here also contributes to the sort of understated Dreamcast-ness of it. I mean, I'm not expecting it to have any strong ties to what Sega was doing, but there are these little things that you just can't help but pick up on having been involved in gaming as long as we have.
Yeah.
And this is something that I'm going to support just on general principle.
Yeah. So $199, who's getting one?
I will. Comes out in May.
I might.
Yeah, I'll pick one up.
Well, theoretically, I could probably just put down a full pre-order payment right now.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's... I would support this ahead of quite a few things. And the other thing to mention is that it's Android-based, so that means that really good racing games, really good JRPGs are pretty much a given.
Yeah. Well,
so more Dreamcast-ness there.
Yeah.
All we need to do is get a few more shmups on it, and we're set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you
should bring back some of the old... You could go back in Treasure's catalog and bring back some of the older
Radiant Silver Gun
games, like, you know, Radiant Silver Gun, Mischief Makers, what was that other one? The one that came out of after, not Ikaruga. It was the other 2D shooter they made after Mischief Makers. It was for the Saturn.
Did they do Dodonpachi?
I remember. No. It was the one where you could, like, if you, depending on what direction you were facing, you were either, like, a red or a blue, and it color-coded all the enemies accordingly. Trying to remember what it's called. That reminds me, we haven't seen a Treasure game in a while.
That's true.
Like, I think the last one they released over here in the U.S. was Sin and Punishment for the Wii.
Yeah.
Hold on. I know this thing's here. Give me a second.
Wouldn't mind a new Silhouette Mirage.
That's it. Silhouette Mirage. That's the one. Also, that's the one I was talking about. That was for the PlayStation and the Saturn.
Yeah.
And that came out back in 97. Also, you know, some of the older stuff like Dynamite Heady, I wouldn't mind seeing again.
Oh, wow. Gunstar Heroes, if we're going to go that far back.
Yeah, I've got Gunstar Heroes on my Wii, so.
I've got it on my PS3 thanks to my Japanese account.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's I remember Mischief Makers when I played that on the N64. I freaking loved that game. Just because of just how very Japanese it was. I mean, it was just, it was about as Japanese as you could get.
Yeah.
But, that's just me showing my age again.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nope. But, moving on from there, looks like Unreal Engine 4, now free for developers.
Let the floodgates burst forth.
Oh. I'm...
Phil? Teresa?
Oh, are we still there?
I think
we
I
are did. Still.
I had muted myself, I think.
Oh.
Wait, whoops. So there's now three very competent engines that developers can use for basically nothing. Royalties, you'll have to pay if your game sells a certain amount, you'll have to pay royalties to Epic. But yeah, you got Unreal Engine 4, which is super advanced. Source 2, which is also pretty good. Unity 5. Yeah, good tech
there. Makes you wonder if we're going to see another Make Something Unreal contest pretty soon.
I don't doubt it in the least.
It would be nice.
Yeah.
Know what else would be nice? An actual Unreal game.
Well, Unreal Tournament is coming back.
It's true.
Yeah, that is. Mm. But I mean like an actual single-player Unreal game.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm. That wouldn't be bad either.
We haven't seen one of those in years.
Yeah. Unreal 2, I think, was the last one, and that was not the high point of the series.
No.
Another little bit of API news. Kronos Group unveiled Vulkan. Which a few weeks ago we talked about the next OpenGL initiative, and Vulkan is what that turned into. Cross-platform graphics engine. You're going to see this on the PS4. I have no doubt about that. You're going to see it on Android, Linux, Mac, Windows. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be a nice response to DirectX 12, which is pretty much going to be Windows and Xbox only. So if you're in the open source crowd, or you're a PlayStation 4 owner, this is going to give you some benefit whenever it starts getting implemented.
It sounds like this might also be an opportunity to kind of open up some real differences between versions of 8th generation games.
First half of 2016.
Yeah.
Did I go too far ahead? What, did you want to say something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's kind of weird that this has actually been a point of complaint for some people that PS4 and Xbox One versions of games are almost entirely identical. Maybe this will the split between Vulkan and DirectX 12 will start to open something like that up, and maybe give certain versions of certain games a leg up over the other.
It's possible, but I have a feeling that they're going to try to keep their games, as close together as they can.
Yeah.
What it will do is, push the boundaries of what that hardware would be capable of. So
yeah,
that's good for everyone.
It is. So, what was going to be our wrap up story this week is no longer. But Sony had their big 4-hour presentation at GDC. We now know Project Morpheus is locked in for the first half of 2016, which means we may be 2 E3s away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Project Cafe rule, and we're going to be doing something on this, on the whole rules of E3. I think we can all generally agree on. Sometime in the coming weeks as the inevitable news lull before E3 sets in. But one of those rules is going to be the Project Cafe rule, which basically says keep your show relevant to the current year, not the following year, or rather the further out a game or system is, the less time it deserves in your presser.
Yeah.
What this means is that Sony has to come to E3, not just with Project Morpheus stuff. You know, they've got to feed us software in the interim. And so this is probably going to set up a historic E3 for them if they play their cards right. But it also means the potential for failure is present.
Yeah.
If they don't. And, you know, the more frugal gamers among us might want to cringe because Shu Yoshida did recently imply that Sony is not taking cost into consideration during R&D of Project Morpheus. So, I mean, hopefully they don't think they can afford to launch it anywhere over $300, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something like a $400 price point.
Yeah.
And see them try to sell it at least in the short term at a higher cost than the PS4.
Yeah. Well, from what I'm seeing of the specs that they're going for, yeah, I could kind of see a high price for that, especially with the display that they're going for. 1080p display doesn't sound, you know, all that impressive, but it's full RGB subpixels, so that's, you know, brings the price up. Plus, they're also shooting for 120 hertz. That's in VR. That's very important. The faster you can refresh those images, the less likely you are to spew chunks all over your living room floor.
And the implication is that the PS4 is built, you know, at the heart of it to run at that speed. What happened with Drive Club?
It's like, I don't think so. I think if they're gonna be shooting for 120 frames a second, what we're gonna end up with is frame interpolation, which will work. I mean, if they get their algorithm right, that will work just as well if you're doing 60 frames and interpolating it to 120. But native 120, if they can pull that off, great. But I think it's gonna take some some work to get that to happen.
Yeah. Well, anything to keep me from piling on the bedroom floor, so.
Yeah.
So during our Clay Fighter segment, you heard me just kind of express my surprise at a news story that was breaking. Square Enix just rolled out an open survey that, you know, a lot of it's pretty standard stuff. What are you currently playing? What, particularly what Square Enix stuff are you currently playing? But there is an open feedback box. What do you want us to work on? What else do you want to say to us now that we're giving you the opportunity to, you know, to say something and we're listening?
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of reasons why this is huge. But yeah, I made sure to get that in on the show because the implications, I mean, obviously we know what they're probably going to get inundated with first and foremost. Whether that actually leads to something this time around or not, only Yosuke Matsuda knows.
Yeah.
But they're opening the lines of communication, they're listening, and you know, they're giving us our platform to advocate for pretty much whatever we want them to make. I noticed that the word chrono also came up quite a bit while I was filling it out.
I can completely understand that one.
And this was just from options that they were giving us in certain questions. So it gives you a really good idea what's on their mind.
Yeah.
And hopefully it implies many, many things to come because, there are a lot of ways they could go with this. And if they're really listening, then kind of gives you a reason to look forward to TGS this fall.
Yeah.
Once they have a chance to really absorb the input and make a few announcements toward the end of the year. But speak while you got the chance, because apparently this is wrapping up. There's a sweepstakes involved with it for a $100 gift certificate for the Square Enix online store, which is great. And the winners of that are going to be announced toward the end of the month. So speak while you got the chance. And I mean, I took the opportunity to advocate for a new Grandia, of course.
I guess we should go around the horn and say, what we'd like to see from them.
Yeah. What do you want to see from them?
Well, I'm going to be pretty weird here and say that I want to see John Romero go back and redo Daikatana.
Okay, actually, you know, the dots for me on this was there a link to Ion Storm, to Eidos?
Yes, there was. Eidos was. Yeah. So Square Enix.
Well, the thing is,
Daikatana.
If the thing is, though, you know, John Romero's. John Romero's already making a new shooter right now, or at least he said he is.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the idea of him going back and making a new Daikatana, redoing Daikatana, actually, you know, considering I actually have played Daikatana, there are some parts in there that actually do interest me, and if he could make it if he could go back and, you know, actually put all his ducks in a row and not make the game and not, you know, just go completely nutso when he's making it, I think he could make a good quality game.
And you know for a fact he wants a do-over on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he doesn't. This was supposed to be his career-defining game.
Yeah.
And it came out, and that's not how you want your career defined. Yeah, I could see that being a thing.
Yeah.
I could see that working out.
So, that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
You guys.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon?
Well, first things first, I'm just going to go with a tie with everyone else who said not so much because of me, but because there's definitely a market for it. Go ahead and redo Final Fantasy VII. I mean, just so I can finally hear everyone stop talking about it.
But the problem is they wouldn't.
Because,
they would talk about it more than they ever have. They would be insufferable. That's what has caused me to advocate their position that we're not going to get a Final Fantasy VII proper remake until they make something that really surpasses it. And why am I echoing?
Yeah, I've been trying to figure that out too.
I could agree to a Final Fantasy VII remake on one condition, and that's that they also do 8 and 9 remade.
I actually would be okay with them.
Redevelopment, rebalancing, and re-everything on the table.
Yeah.
Like, don't just give the game a cosmetic change. Go in and fine-tune it. And if they wanted to, I mean, Voice of Dissent is turning into a list of changes that I would personally make to Final Fantasy VIII.
I
think there is a good game in there just kicking and screaming trying to get out.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Square Enix take a crack at that. So don't stop at Final Fantasy VII. If you're going to remake that properly, do the PS1 years. Revisit those, give them the functional and cosmetic update that they deserve, and we'll go from there. And Final Fantasy IX needs more attention than it ever got.
Yeah, Final Fantasy IX is actually, honestly, I'm going to be completely honest, it's my favorite Final Fantasy game from the PS1 era. It actually is.
Mine too.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Final Fantasy VII when it came out, and I still do. Final Fantasy VIII still has a lot of nostalgic appeal for me, despite all its problems. But Final Fantasy IX had a sense of whimsy and wonder to it that just the other two games couldn't equal. It also had my favorite Final Fantasy end credit song as well. You know. But, let's see. Other than, you know, them remaking Final Fantasy VII, I wouldn't mind seeing another Einhander.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that's an old game that from Square I really liked. Also, I would really like another Bushido Blade.
Yeah, I could
get down with that.
See, and those of you who don't remember what Bushido Blade was a really it's really kind of hard to sort of put it in genre terms. On its surface, it seems if you ever see pictures of it, it looks like a one-on-one fighter, but really what it was is it was more of a sword action simulator, because you didn't have a life bar or anything. Any type of damage or death was completely on what type of hit and where you were hit. It could take 3 or 4 hits. If they do it right, you could die in just one. There was even a character in there that actually had a pistol and could take you out with one hit.
I fucking hated that battle.
Yeah, and then don't forget also there was that whole, you had to go by that whole code of honor to be able to get through the whole game.
Yeah.
Which could be really challenging.
And still get the game over.
Yeah.
Which was...
Yeah. Oh, and then one more...
I don't think it was very well explained either.
Yeah, it was something like you couldn't hit a person in the back, you couldn't attack them while they were speaking to you, and you couldn't have an injury. Like, even one bandage would completely screw it up. And one more thing, again, I'm going to be reaching into the obscurity for this. I want, if not a remake, at least a proper sequel to Brave Fencer Musashi.
Well, they did do that on the PS2, but I wouldn't mind another one.
Yeah.
The original Brave Fencer Musashi was one of my favorite PlayStation games. Yeah. It just was. It was just really fun and just... it's really hard to kind of describe it, but it was just so much fun. It was a really fun action... I don't know if I could call it an action RPG, because it was really more of an action game with like some small RPG elements in it.
They themselves called it an action RPG. Like Square Enix themselves marketed it as one.
Yeah, it's the same thing I loved about old Square games, is that they had this sense of whimsy and wonder to them that made them so exciting and fun to play. Every new thing was just something awesome to see and experience, and it wasn't just a freaking corridor the whole friggin' time. It just, but that would be mostly my Square Enix. Also, I'd love to see another Guys, but one that doesn't suck. So that's my other.
I think we got that.
That's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Teresa?
That's pretty much mine.
Okay. Well, obviously Final Fantasy VII. Yes.
Whoa. Volume.
Oh.
I don't know what's going on over there, but volume.
Yeah, you're too low somehow.
Too low? How about this? A little bit better?
Slightly.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
There we go.
Okay, there we go.
Sorry. Okay, obviously Final Fantasy VII, we all want it, and we all want to stop talking about it.
Yeah.
we just want it to happen. We already know that, they're going to do another Kingdom Hearts, so I'm not going to go there. But what I will say is that I would like another Star Ocean, and I'd really like to see them do another Parasite Eve so my husband will shut up.
Okay.
Actually,
that just made me think of something. You know what would be two things that would be really awesome that would just completely break the internet? First thing, the Kingdom Hearts 3 game. This would completely destroy the internet. What if you went into, the space and then found out that one of the zones you can go to was Equestria? From My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. That would completely destroy the internet.
It would be over. We'd be
is that Disney?
Some anarchy.
No, but they've done non-Disney stuff before, so.
Yeah. Huh.
And the other one,
I actually need to sit down and play these one of these times because they've been sitting. I bought Danrib's copy of 1.5, and I still need to pick up 2.5. The Disney aspect of it does nothing for me because I didn't really grow up on Disney. But I don't know. I've had people tell me that the game relies on that, and I've had other people tell me that it's not that important. So, having any Disney nostalgia personally, I've kind of not really gravitated toward it, just thinking that a lot of the game would be lost on me.
Yeah. Other thing, this is just because I have a really sick sense of humor. What if Square Enix did go ahead, do a full remake of Final Fantasy VII, and then they don't tell anyone until after the game is out and everyone's had a chance to play it, and Sephiroth attacks Ares and she lives?
Or just add the oft-rumored side quest to bring her back.
Yeah, that would completely just destroy the internet.
Yeah,
you know that saying. You know that saying that some men just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
That's us. No, we'll own that.
Actually, just for the record, for Kingdom Hearts, I will admit that the Disney nostalgia is kind of a big part of it. But the thing part of what made the game so good is that it put you in this sort of space where it made you feel like you were like you'd actually gone to Disney World, which for me was really awesome. For you, your mileage may vary. So.
Kind of an interesting list of titles that we all would like to see.
So it was just one of those happy little surprises that happened over the course of the show. Yeah. That was not our question of the week. The question of the week this week is, again, bringing up a future episode. We don't know when we'll be doing this, but we're sort of compiling a list of the rules of E3. For example, there was the Project Cafe rule, which was everything that you do must be pertinent to, 95% of what you do must be pertinent to stuff that will be in our hands by the next E3, or alternatively, the time you spend in your show on any given thing should be inversely proportionate to how far out it is. The sooner we get something, the more time it deserves on the show. Another one would be, say, the Kazhirai rule: no sales figures save the most basic numbers are allowed at your presser. You know,
right?
Stuff like that. We want to hear your rules of E3, and we're going to be kind of compiling those. And one of these weeks, when news starts to dry up leading up to E3, we'll go over the list of some of the things that have come in, because I think there are quite a few that we could probably pretty safely agree upon.
Yeah, I've got one.
Okay.
When you look at your keynote script, you should probably look at it through the eyes of what kind of animated GIFs will be coming out of it.
Reggie? That's a good... There's the Reggie rule.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's definitely one we can pretty much agree on. And I think that's why Nintendo stopped doing live stage shows.
Yeah. I think I've got one. I call it the Mr. Caffeine rule.
Oh no.
Which is make sure that your keynote speaker is not some stupid gimmick.
Well, I've kind of got that one covered on the document that I've kind of set aside for said show. But yeah, you take a look at that, because we are definitely compiling these for one of our pre E3 specials, of which I anticipate there will be many. So just something to look forward
to. One more.
Yeah, we got to get a show.
I call it the Jamie. I was like, one more. The Jamie Kennedy rule. Shoot to kill.
Always.
Yeah. Any of you guys?
So,
two in the head, three in the chest. You know how this goes.
So, is that a show?
I think that's a show.
Pretty much.
Yep. Final thoughts?
Oh, it was fun. I'm glad we managed to. Well, I just want to thank a lot of the people who showed up at PAX East for not generating so much news that we ended up with a 3-hour show.
Because I
was really dreading that. I was kind of worried since I didn't have a chance to run over to Dunkin' Donuts before the show to grab a box of Joe. Because
yes.
I was pretty sure I was going to need it, but apparently not.
Well, wait for next week. We probably might have some more. Yeah. So.
All
right. Well, with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Messlin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Update complete.
We'll see you next week.
Ta-ta!